Welcome, everyone. It's really good to see everyone again. I'm very much enjoying this series. I hope you are as well. What I want to do today is I want to finish up the second parak, the second chapter, and then transition on to the third. And I think the third chapter, the story that we'll find there, is one of the most challenging in the entire Megillah. It happens to be the shortest chapter in the Megillah, but it's a very challenging one. And we'll try to figure out the different elements of the story together today. First, just to review what we've done in the last couple sessions, just to review the story, Elimelech, along with his wife Naomi and their two sons, go down to Moab. Elimelech dies. His two sons marry Rut and Orpah. Rut and Orpah become widows because those two sons die. Naomi goes back to Beit Lechem. Rut and Orpah try to go with her. Orpah eventually bows out, but Rut sticks with her. They get back to Beit Lechem, not the warmest welcome. Then in the second chapter, Rut ends up in Boaz's field. Rut isn't treated so nicely, but Boaz is very generous to her. He recognizes her, and Rut is able to glean a lot from the field. Now, what we're up to at the end of the second chapter is the issue of Rut and Boaz's relationship from then on. And we tried to develop two themes so far in the Sefer. First, that Rut's journey is trying to return from Lot's mistake to abandon the path of Avraham. So Rut is returning to the path of Avraham. And we also developed the theme of recognition, the importance of dignifying other people and recognizing others and not just to treat them as objects. And that was the theme of the second chapter. I would say that each of these individual themes we're going to develop loop into a broader meta theme, namely the theme of Sefer Rut being a response, or Megillah Rut being a response or a remedy to Sefer Shoftim. So now we're all caught up. Where we're up to now, I'm going to share the screen. Okay. So what we're up to now is the end of the second chapter. And here, this is after Rut's finished gleaning in the field, and now she's returning to Naomi. This is important for the background to the story in chapter 3. So Rut comes back. She's working out there in the field all day. And so she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was an ephah of barley. That's a huge amount. That's meals for 10 days. Boaz is very generous with her, and she comes back to give it to Naomi. And Naomi says, where did you, where did you get all this from? How exactly did this happen? Interestingly, Naomi asks two questions. There might be something there about why two questions. Did Rut, do something promiscuous for the person who gave her all this food. That's the Malbim suggestion. But regardless, Naomi is very excited about it. She says, Baruch Hu Hashem. And then Rut tells her who did this for her, who was generous to her, and who is that? It says, Boaz. That person who was generous with me today was Boaz. Now, up to this point in the story, Rut has no idea that Boaz is related and that Boaz could be her redeemer. So now Naomi drops the bombshell. Batomer Naomi lechalata. Sorry, I'm just going to blow this up a little more. Batomer Naomi lechalata. Baruch hu Hashem. Ashelo azav chastos lechayim v'samitim. So Naomi blesses Boaz, who exactly did kindness we discussed at the end of the last session. And then she says the following, Batomer la Naomi, and Naomi says to her, Karov lanu ha'ish, this man, Boaz, is related to us. Migo aleinu hu, he is one of our redeemers. Now, just for a moment to talk about what does it mean to be a goel, a redeemer, in Chumash, it comes up twice. One context is, as I show you here, when one of your fellow family members becomes very poor and have to sell off their field, you, the closest family member, have to go and redeem the field for them. So it could be that it's redeeming the field for Naomi and Ruth, meaning Naomi's field, which she had and lost or sold off, that has to be redeemed. The other context, of course, is Yibam, is marrying your deceased brother's wife. Now here, it's not exactly Yibam because Boaz is not going to be Ruth's, Naomi's, Elimelech's brother, but it's the same. The Mefarshim, the commentaries talk about it's really the same idea, that it's redeeming the brother's wife and redeeming the family and giving them progeny. So that's what we might go out a redeemer, right? Redeeming the land. And here we're primarily talking about is redeeming root by marrying the widow of their relative. So what does root respond? And I think this is shocking. Now, Naomi told her, this great guy in the field, his name is Boaz, right? He's our relative. He could even marry you. What does Ruth respond? So if I were Ruth, I would be extremely excited. This is great, right? Lovely fellow. He's one of our redeemers. I have the potential of marrying him. This is extremely exciting. What does Ruth respond, though? Atoma wrote, Ruth ha-Moavia, gam ki amar elai ima ne'arim asher li tidbakin. So she says, oh, he told me I should hang out with the men. Until I finish gathering all my gleanings. What's missing here? Ruth's response to the Naomi's bombshell, right? Ruth seems to completely ignore this idea that Boaz is her goel, her redeemer. Now, I think one explanation for this might be that she doesn't really understand what the concept of goel is. That could be one explanation. A second explanation is, but Tomer Ruha Moaviah, we pointed out last time that the word, the description of Ruth as the Moabite is actually very important because it reflects the way she views herself sometimes and the way others view her. Here, I think it's the way she views herself. I'm a lowly Moabite. Boaz is this Ish Gibor Chayil. He's this tremendous person in society, a man of substance and wealth and respect. Who am I to marry him? It's totally irrelevant to Ruth that this guy is her goel. Of course, he's not going to be interested in me. I am just a lowly Moabite. Now, Naomi, in the next pasuk, I see someone's hand is raised. So in just one moment, if they'd like to be called on, they're certainly welcome. So Atoma Naomi al Ruth Kalata. So Naomi says to Ruth Kalata, very interesting. Here Naomi, for the first time, refers to Ruth by her name. It says, Tov Biti, she says, it's good if you go out with the girls and don't go out to any other field. Stick with Boaz. Now, at the end of this chapter, we're very excited. We see that Ruth has, has coincidentally met Boaz. Of course, it's miraculous. It's God's hand. And we learn that Boaz is Ruth's redeemer. Very exciting. But what happens? The whole chapter ends with a thud. It's a dud, right? What happens? But Tidbak b'na'arot Boaz, Ruth goes out every day to Boaz's field, l'dakea kol k'tzira sorim, to finish gathering until the end of the season. The barley harvest, ukusira chitim, and the wheat harvest, vatisha v'chamota, and she returned to her mother-in-law. She returns to Naomi. Now we understand that Naomi was extremely excited about this. This was huge news to her. Here you have someone who could redeem their field, a wealthy man who's going to marry Ruth, who potentially can marry her. This is extremely exciting, and he had expressed interest in Ruth. Now, what's Naomi hoping for? That before the end of this stretch, this long 2-3 month long stretch of gathering, something would happen. Some progress would be made between Boaz and Ruth. But nothing. It's a total thud, right? The parak ends off in a very sort of sad way for Naomi and Ruth. And that's the background to the third chapter, which is a story we're about to discuss. Was someone's hand up before? Or is that an accident? Okay, we'll assume you pipe in at any moment if you would like. Now, in the third chapter, this is the story of Ruth and Boaz at the threshing floor, at the Goren. This is a very startling story. If we'll summarize it just for a moment. Basically, Naomi has Ruth go down to the threshing floor, seemingly to seduce Boaz, and secure their relationship, and then in the end, Boaz is willing to take responsibility for her. But the notion that Ruth is going to seduce Boaz is surely surprising and frankly shocking. But let's take a look together closely at this chapter. So, and Naomi has the following plan. If you can, like everyone, try to take a look at it, try to understand what is the nature of Naomi's plan? What's going on here? So, Vatomra Naomi Chamota. So, Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, Biti, halo avakesh lach manoach. Haven't I said to you that I want to secure for you a resting place? Asher yitav lach. That's referring to marriage, something good for you. So, who is it for? Lach, for you, Ruth. Yitav lach, for you, Ruth. Again, this is all beneficial for Ruth, Naomi is saying. And he says, and then she says, Vata halo boaz moda tanu. Asher hayita et narotav. So you know, Boaz, you're with his workers in the field, his female workers in the field. And she says that he right now is lying. He's going to be winnowing barley, the melacha of Zorah and Shabbos, winnowing. So he's going to be winnowing the barley in the Goren tonight. So now she's telling you this is where his location. Here's what you should do, Ruth. Barachatzta, and bathe yourself. Visachta, and put on a anoint yourself. And wear a lovely dress. Viaradit hagoren, and then go down to the threshing floor. And don't make yourself known to him until he finishes drinking and eating. What exactly does drinking and eating mean here? It could mean that it means until he's drunk, but most contexts in Tanakh, this refers to being full and happy and in a very pleasant mood. So then she says, "Vayhi b'shachvo v'yadat et hamakom asher yishkav sham uvat v'gilita." So, and when he's lying down, and you know where he's lying down, ubat, and you should go over to him v'gilit margalotav and uncover his feet v'shachavd, and you should lie with him v'hu yagid lach et asher tasin, and you wait for him to direct you what he wants to do with you. Now, the question I'd like to ask is, does this, what exactly is Naomi's plan here? Is Naomi just trying to initiate some action, or is Naomi trying to have perhaps more promiscuous motives? So I think you could read it both ways. I think the second way is stronger. With regard to the first way, that what is Naomi trying to do? We mentioned she's frustrated. At the end of the last chapter, nothing has progressed. Right, she's been hoping that Boaz will reach out to Ruth. They need someone to create descendants. They need someone to redeem their field, and nothing happens. And so now they've been waiting day after day after day, and they're just waiting for something to occur, for Boaz to come, and it's not happening. So Naomi says, I have to get this going. I have to get the ball rolling. And maybe Boaz will say yes, maybe Boaz will say no, but the point is I need something to happen. She's been waiting. We need to know. Let's make the ball. Let's get the ball rolling. That's one option. That's some of the some commentaries suggest. I would say perhaps and to bolster that, at no point in those psukim is it clear that she wants Ruth to sleep with Boaz. At no point does it say explicitly have relations with Boaz and seduce him. So if you read it that way, you say it's not clear that she's trying to seduce him at all. But if you look at, there's another way to read it, and I think that's probably the more obvious one, which is that she's telling Ruth to go to the Goren to try to seduce Boaz. Why? If she goes and seduces Boaz, then Boaz is going to be committed to her. This will guarantee Boaz's commitment. So if she goes and is successful, then Boaz will be very Well, he's an honorable man. That's what it says at the end of the chapter. He's a very honorable man. He'll stick with Ruth. And this is a way of guaranteeing, sort of with subterfuge, a way of guaranteeing that Boaz is going to marry Ruth and redeem her. Now, how can we make this case that, it doesn't say explicitly that she's trying to have Ruth seduce him? So if you take a look here, though, at all these different verbs. So first of all, just verachat zisachta v'samt, right? So you should v'samt v'samosayich. She should get ready, anointed, dressed up. You can't ignore the context of what she's trying to do to get herself all dolled up. And then v'yaradti goren, go to the goren. What connotation does goren, a threshing floor, have in Tanakh? So if you look at Sefer Hosea, one of the 12 minor prophets, so Hosea says, Al tismach Yisrael, dot, 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 because you have Kizanitam Elokacha, you have loved the harlot's fee. Ahat esnan al kol garnot dagan, by every threshing floor of new grain. Basically, a place of committing harlotry and a place of doing things inappropriate is a threshing floor. That's the connotation. So we see, go to the threshing floor. Right? The connotation is that she's trying to say, cause Boaz to be seduced, and then he'll be forced to stick with you. Second of all, if you look at these, if you look at the verbs here, it says, "Vayhi b'shachvo." Shachav in the Tanakh has a very sexual connotation. V'yadat, v'yada in Tanakh also has a sexual connotation. Yishkav, again shachav. Ubat, ba'alav, right, to have relations again. V'gilita, to be megala, to make something naked, to uncover. And then again, later on, it talks about arima, which is means something else there, but again, this notion of arum. And so what seems to be happening is that she's really trying to get Ruth to trick Boaz into sleeping with her and to ensure that Boaz will stick with her by seducing him. Now, if we talk about this idea or this plan, you know, how could this possibly be appropriate? Now, I think certainly the question is a little better than the answer. I think part of the answer has to be that this is their last choice. Meaning, why doesn't just Naomi go to the door? Why don't she go knock on Boaz's door? I think it's been pretty clear up to this point that Naomi's relationship with Bealechem is not a very strong one. Right? She's abandoned them. She and her family abandoned them to go to Moab. So she can't go over to Boaz. She's not going to be able to go, hey, Boaz, you know, let's get the ball rolling, you know, marry Ruth. So she has to do it in this sort of mischievous way. But the question is still justified to act like this. So a lot, you know, seemingly it's probably challenging. A lot of the commentaries do sort of condemn Naomi for this, but there is precedent, right? Where else in Tanakh do we have a notion of someone who feels lost, who's worried that they won't have any descendants, that they won't have any continuation after them, where they perform sort of a inappropriate scheme of trickery, getting people to sleep with them? Two places. One is Vivian, exactly, daughters of Lot. And who's the other ancestor to Ruth and Boaz where this occurs? Anybody know? Yehuda and Tamar, right? Those two stories, Yehuda and Tamar and the daughters of Lot. Just, we'll review those stories outside just for a moment. And this is very, in Megillah Ruth itself, it references Yehuda and Tamar in the end of the fourth chapter. The story with Yehuda and Tamar is the following. You know, we'll start with Lot, because Lot's earlier in Bereishit. What happens with Lot is that Sodom is destroyed. The two son-in-laws are totally, you know, are gone. They're out of the picture. And basically, the daughters of Lot believe that no one's left. The world is about to be destroyed. It has been destroyed. There won't be any more of mankind. And so how do they produce children? How do they ensure that mankind won't die out? Simple. Have relations with their father. Now, what do they do to have relations with their fathers? We'll explore the story a little more in depth at the end of the shiur. But what do? They basically get him drunk at night and have relations with him. He's not, you know, he's basically unaware of the fact that that's happening. So that's one scheme to ensure progeny. The second scheme is with Tamar. Tamar, Yehuda won't give her his last son. So Tamar marries two of Yehuda's sons. They both die. Finally, Yehuda says, I can't give you my third son. He's too young. So Tamar basically tricks him. She acts as if she's a prostitute, a harlot, and Yehuda has relations with her. She dresses up. She has sort of like Ruth, right? This idea of like dressing up, and she gets Yehuda to have relations with her. So you have two contexts in Tanakh. Happens to be the ancestors of Ruth and Boaz, where they commit these acts of trickery in order to ensure progeny. So there is precedent for it, but again, certainly surprising. Before we transition to the next part, though, I think the question we've been addressing or raising throughout the series so far is, what exactly is the mindset of Naomi? I think it's a very challenging question. Seemingly from Naomi's words, she's very altruistic. But also we can understand that part of Naomi's intentions may be for her own benefit. She feels totally empty, and now she has opportunities for her own continuation. And the number one tip in marketing or in sales is to say, oh, this is so good for you. This is going to be great for you. I know this is perfect for you. I think it's possible to read Naomi a little bit less of a positive way, not negative, just more of a natural human being. But now I want to ask, what's Root's response here? What does Root want to go do this, commit this deed? So here's what I think is very interesting. If you look at the psukim, Root says, "Batomer Eli kol asher tomri Eli eset." Root says, "Naomi, you tell me to do this. Anything you say, I will do." And then she says, "Vatirat hagoren, vatasu kol asher sivta chamuta." And she goes to the goren and she does everything her mother-in-law told her to do. Now, if you look here, right, there's something missing. Earlier, what did Naomi tell her to do prior to going down to the threshing floor? She said, go get all dolled up, right? And then go down to the threshing floor. Here, she goes down to the threshing floor, and then it says she did everything that her mother-in-law told her. It could be that this is just, a summary pasuk. It's not missing. It's not to the exclusion of anything else. But Rashi and the Medrash both argue that there is something missing. She says, Naomi says to her, get all dolled up, and then go down to the goren. And she did not do it. Why not? She says, if I go down when I'm all dolled up, hapogea bi, someone who encounters me and sees me will say that I'm a zona, I'm a harlot. And so therefore she didn't go down all dressed up. So I think this, you clearly see Ruth's discomfort with Naomi's plan. She decides she's willing to do it, but there's clearly discomfort with it. She doesn't want people to think of her in such a way. Think about her Moabite roots. The two problems with Moab were that they were not generous, they were not kind. And the second problem with Moab is that Moab was promiscuous. And so Ruth is trying to abandon that identity, go to the path of Abraham. And what is Naomi basically telling her to do? Go back to the path of Moab. And Ruth runs a real risk here, because if she goes to Boaz and Boaz responds to her, says, "What are you should be ashamed of yourself trying to seduce me. What are you doing?" That would destroy her reputation. And so Ruth's putting herself at real risk here. She's doing it nonetheless. I also think that there's another reason to think that she's not so into it. Why? Pasuk Hey says, "Vatomer laha." She said, "Tomri, anything you said to me." But later says, "Kosher tsivata." Anything that you commanded me, meaning you're commanding me to do it. It's not advice. It's not a suggestion. It's you commanding me. That's why I'm doing it. And it's not clear whether it's really for Ruth's benefit or for Naomi's benefit. But Ruth, nonetheless, as we've talked about, her special characteristic of kindness is one of self-nullifying kindness. It's Lag BaOmer here in Kew Garden Hills. So you can hear the music playing. Ruth has self-nullifying kindness, right? This defines Ruth, that she's so willing to, even maybe disgrace herself for the sake of Naomi. But now we get to the main part of our story, and that's the story of the threshing floor. So Ruth goes down, she does what her mother-in-law tells her to do, and then Boaz gets all, he gets full, he drinks, and then he goes to the heap of grain to lie down. And what does Ruth do? She goes to this heap of grain and she uncovers his feet and she lies down. Very interesting. Only one place I think it has this exact formulation in Tanakh, and that's by Makah Bechoro, plague of the firstborns. And what does Boaz do? So you would, okay, so he says, Boaz becomes maybe frightened, scared, excited. It's hard to know exactly what Vayecharad means. It says, Vayila fate, Bihine Isha Shochevet Margalotav. He grasped and said, all of a sudden there's a woman lying at his feet. I think it's really interesting here is Haish and Isha. They don't have names, right? We remove, say, Boaz and Ruth. It says Ish and Isha. Then he says to her the following, and I think this is a critical part of the entire Sefer Ruth. What does Boaz respond to her? But what does Boaz do to her? Instead of having relations with her, there hears this perhaps beautiful Moabite woman all dressed up with makeup and everything. This is an opportunity to have relations with her. You could think of Yehuda. You could think of Lot, people, at night having relations. It makes total sense that the Goren, why not take advantage of this opportunity? What would we expect Boaz to do? Seemingly the natural thing would be in this sexually charged atmosphere for Boaz to choose to be seduced by Ruth, to have relations with her. What happens? It says, Vayomer mi'at. He says, who are you? That's critical. Because here what Boaz is doing is saying, I'm not willing to treat you as just an object. You're not some, sexual object that has no name, that deserves no respect or dignity. I'm not going to treat you in that way. I want to know who you are. You're a human being. Who are you before anything happens? Who are you? And she says, "V'tomar anochi Ruth amatech," says, I am Ruth, your maidservant. Ruth's become more confident throughout the book. Now she's willing to say, I'm likely your maidservant. Earlier she says, I'm not as worthy as even your maidservant. And she says, "Uparasek anafach amatech kigo alata," and put your cloak over your maidservant because you are my redeemer. Here's a critical moment in Ruth where Boaz, despite the clear, certainly we would understand someone to fall prey to their inhibitions here, to fall prey to their lust, as we know other members of people in Tanakh have. But instead, Boaz has this strength, this inner strength, in order to not fall prey to this. Right? And instead of having relations with Ruth, he actually recognizes her as a human being. As we mentioned earlier, the earlier chapter, he recognizes her as a human being. She's not just an object. And therefore, Boaz is known for this type of kindness. Right? And that's what Boaz is doing here. He's treating her as a human being, someone with dignity, not just someone to have relations with. I think this is pointed to in Pasuk Chet. Before Boaz recognizes her, it's Ish and Isha. They're playing to their lowest common denominator, just man and woman with their carnal desires. But the next Pasuk, when he recognizes her, it's Ruth, and then later Boaz. And the Midrashim play up how much taiva, desire, Boaz had and still refrained. I think what's interesting here as well is the phrase that Ruth says to Boaz is, spread your cloak over your maidservant. Uparasa kanafecha ala matcha. What did earlier Boaz praise Ruth and bless her? He says, you should be blessed. Hashem should bless you. Why? Because you've come under his cloak. Very interesting. Why does Ruth invoke the same language? I think it's the idea is that, Boaz, you think God is the one who's supposed to be doing this. You said, but you have to be his messenger. You have to be the one to marry me, to redeem the field. That is your responsibility. And so you're saying God should do this, but you should be the one act out God's will. And I think earlier in last shiur, we were talking a lot about how kindness should be sort of, we don't even know whether it's God or man anymore. Because the point is, you're supposed to be acting out God's will to such an extent that becomes unclear. Now, I want to, and I think this is perhaps the most important part of the chapter, is to explain how kind of a man Boaz is. There's a Rav in Alon Shvut, I'm sure some of you have heard of him. His name is Rav Yoel ben Nun. Rav Yoel ben Nun happens to be he actually liberated the Kotel. Mori, did you have Rav Yoel ben Nun in Gush?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very interesting person. Lots to say about him. And like Dreamers, the book that came out by Yossi Klein Halevi several years ago, there's a whole long profile of him. He writes about the Boaz stories. He says, when I read the Boaz stories, tears come out of my eyes from reading these verses, from reading about the kindness of Boaz. And I think here, in these next few psukim, you're going to see why Boaz is such an exceptional character here in Tanakh. We have to think about what type of kindness is he doing. So let's take a look. So if you look over here, it says, Vayomer mi'a. So we read this verse already, that he says he recognizes her. And then what does he do? Right? You have this atmosphere, this woman came down to seduce him, to try to trap him into marrying her. Right? That was the original plan from the Ami. Go down, try to seduce him. So what potentially could Boaz say? You should be ashamed of yourself, trying to trick me into this, to try to do this very inappropriate act. But what does Boaz say? Instead of saying to her, you know, getting angry at her for doing this, for, you know, surprising him at night, for doing this seemingly inappropriate act, what does he say to her? Brucha at Lashem, BT. He says, you should be blessed. You are blessed to God. He calls her my daughter. Hitavta chastecha acharon min harishon. Your kindness now is greater than your first kindness. To go with Naomi, levilti lechet acharei havachurim, that you didn't go after the young ones, sorry, the single men, imdal v'imashir, whether rich, poor, you decided instead to come to me. I'm an old man, and you came to me instead. You decided not to go marry anybody else in the city. And then the famous pasuk, she said, "Don't." He says, "Don't worry about it. Anything you say to me, I will do." Because everyone knows, the whole city knows. He says, "Ruth, you're an Isha Chayil." So, what's so special about Boaz here? I think it's the following. One is that he recognizes that Ruth is doing this out of kindness. Instead of casting aspersions as to what Ruth is trying to do, why Ruth is here, he understands that Ruth is here out of chesed. He realizes it, right? Many others would say, you should be ashamed of yourself, Ruth. But Boaz understands that really Ruth's doing it out of kindness. He ascribes these positive intentions to her. But it's not only that. He says that it's really her kindness to me. But it's not a kindness, it's her, you're doing kindness to me, that you're coming to me instead of to all the young men of the city. And what else does he say? He says that you didn't go after the rich or the poor men, the young or the old even, met other men of the city. Now let me ask you, is that a real compliment here? Does that really seem like a possibility to you that would have happened with Ruth? I don't think so. Because if you look at the previous chapters, Ruth is kind of treated as a stranger, this outsider. No one's really interested in her at all. So the notion that people all of a sudden would marry this widowed Moabite stranger doesn't seem so likely. No rich man is going to take Ruth up on that. So I think the point is that he's trying to play her up. He's trying to make her feel exceptional about herself. And it's making it into her her chesed. And he calls her the ultimate praise, he isha chayalah. So Boaz, not only is he saying that this is chesed, saying your chesed is, you know, is great, is you're doing chesed to me, even though Boaz is the one doing chesed to her because he's going to be the one who redeems her. Rabbi. And he calls her the Isha Chayil. Right? And so Boaz is going above and beyond in a situation where he could severely rebuke Ruth and to play her down. Instead, he makes sure to recognize Ruth, to assume she's acting out of good motives, and to say that she's doing kindness to him, even though he's really doing kindness for her. Now,
didn't the Moabite women have a bad reputation, and that's why he had to tell the men in the field not to touch her? And so when she's coming here, he's showing that she appreciates that she's not truly a Moabite woman in that sense.
100%, right? Boaz is the one who's able to recognize that she's not just some Moabite woman who's acts promiscuously. This is Ruth. She's abandoned those Moabite roots. She's coming to act in the path of Avraham. And so I think that's exactly the point, right? That's what Boaz is able to see outside the external parts of Ruth and really understand that she's this very special, kind woman.
And not to knock her, but why would we say that going after the richest guy in town makes her the most special woman?
You're saying why Ruth goes after Boaz?
He is clearly the richest guy in town.
Oh, the reason, yeah, it's a good question.
So to say that, just for him to say, oh, you're not going after the other rich men, yeah, because you're the richest guy in the town.
And, oh, he's the redeemer.
I thought part of the chesed was the fact that he may be around 300 years old at this time.
Right, so exactly. I mean, Boaz is saying the chesed is that you didn't go after those men, you went to me. And why? Why is that such a kindness? Because I'm this old man. He says, I think some mentioned today, I'm 80, he's 80 years old. Ruth's, you know, twice as young as him. You know, she's not a youngster. She was married for 10 years, but, you know, she's maybe 40 or younger. And so the chesed that she does, that Boaz is saying she's doing, even though it's not a real chesed, she didn't have other options, is that she decided to go after Boaz, this elderly man, instead of going after someone younger. And I think that actually is a very important point, because the dynamic between Ruth and Boaz is not this romance. as you'll see in a moment. But if you look at the last chapter, right, Boaz first comes over to Ruth, and he calls like her daughter, his daughter. And then you'd imagine that after meeting her for the first time, you'd imagine there'd be some follow-up, but there's no follow-up, right? And Ruth doesn't seem that interested in him either, but there's no follow-up. That doesn't sound like a story of romance. And here we're going to see why I think it's furthermore not a story of romance, and this is really going to be for the next chapter. But in the next two psukim, what does he say? This is all exciting. Boaz says, I'm gonna take up your charge, Ruth. I will be goel you. I will redeem you. But then what happens? So then he says to her, here, if I have it. Yeah, let's see here. Then he says to her, but v'ata ki anam ki im goel anochi, but even though I am a goel and I'm willing to do it, v'gamish goel karobim, he's actually someone closer in line to me. It says that stay the night, lini halayla. By the way, lini has no sexual connotation, so it's like a very, he's changing up the phrases, the words intentionally to emphasize it's not a sexual act. The narrator says, v'ayab b'boker migalech tov, Yigal, if this other guy, the closer one, Ploni Almoni, as we'll see, is interested in redeeming you, then he can. And if not, and if he's not, I will redeem you. So again, let's say you found what you think is your perfect, your soulmate, right? You found the one. I'm willing to marry you. I want to marry you. But you know what? My roommate over there, let's give that a chance first, see if he's interested, and then, we'll deal with it. That if he's not, it's not a love story, right? It's a sense of responsibility. It's a sense of obligation to each other. It's a type of kindness. And that's the whole point. It's instead of making this story one of, sexual seduction and making it or even a love story, the point is that Ruth and Boaz, Ruth's marrying this old man. She's not particularly interested in him, on her own. And Boaz, Joe's been bothering me about the fact that they call Boaz Ibsan. Boaz Ibsan. Ibsan and Shoftim has like 30, maybe 60 kids. She's like a ton of kids. But the point is, like, Boaz also like, doesn't need this either. He's just doing it out of kindness to Ruth. I think the idea here is like we understand it's not a romantic story. This is an obligation, right? It's a way to fulfill, redeem the land, to redeem the daughter-in-law of Naomi, and to eventually bring progeny to them. I want to just in the last few moments compare this story to two others, and then just so at the end of the parak, Ruth goes back to Naomi, and Naomi says, how'd it go? And she says she's going to talk to this other guy, and then he'll get back to us. And Naomi says, I'll get back to you soon. And the last 5 minutes, I want to compare this to one other story. Hold on a sec. Let me just share the screen. Okay. So there's two other stories that we mentioned earlier. And, and by the way, Boaz mirrors Ruth's language. Boaz says to Ruth, all that you say to me, I will do. Ruth calls her Tomri Eselach, and she says, what did Ruth say to Naomi? Calls her Tomri Eli Eseh. He's saying, your kindness, I'm reacting to your kindness. Lini Halayla. And she says to him, she says to Naomi, Uvasher Talini Alin. That's part of it, right? She's saying, in response to your kindness, I'm being kind. But what exactly, I just want to focus we have 4 minutes left. I want to just focus on one aspect of the Boaz story. Right? What is so important about Boaz rejecting this path, and instead falling prey to seduction, to such a scene. So there's two other stories we mentioned. One was Lot, right? Lot gets drunk, and Yehuda gets tricked by the fact that Tamar's all dressed up, and they end up having relations with their daughters or with their daughter-in-law. But there's a key phrase that comes up in each of these stories as to how they fell prey to it. And he says, in Bereishis, the Torah says, V'lo yada, she sleeps with her father, V'lo yada, and he did not know, B'shechvav kumah. He didn't know when he went to sleep. V'lo yada, he did not know. Like he wasn't aware. What is it about Yehuda? Ki lo yada, ki chalato hi. He did not know that she was her kala. But he didn't know that this was his daughter-in-law. And Naomi says to Boaz, trying to perform the same scheme, Verata Goren, don't make yourself known to the man. Right? The whole point is Naomi's saying to her, don't become known to him, because this is the way to get him to be responsible to redeem you. But what does Boaz do? Boaz is not someone who's willing to fall prey to not knowing. Someone not knowing in Tanakh has a very negative connotation. Not knowing means that you don't care about your destiny, you don't care about your future. And if you think about the story of Lot, the whole Sodom has been destroyed. He thinks there's no one else in the world, right? He doesn't really care much about his future. He's abandoned the path of Avraham. And so Lot basically gives up. He doesn't really care anymore. You don't seek out to know more. Yehuda also has abandoned his siblings. His wife had just died. His kids had died. He's no longer interested in the path of Avraham. And so therefore, he's kind of given up on his destiny at this point. And therefore, lo yada, he doesn't care. Boaz, though, absolutely not. Boaz, vayomer mi'at. He needs to know who this woman is. He's not someone who's lo yada. He's someone that actually cares about his destiny, how he's going to be, his family, his heritage is going to be moving in the future. And that's part of what makes Boaz so special. He's not someone who's lo yada. But there's another story that in Sefer Shoftim, with which we'll conclude. And that's a story of Shimshon. So we've said that our meta theme for the series is how Ruth is a remedy for Shoftim. And our fifth shiur coming up in a couple of weeks will really delve into the relationship between Ruth and Shoftim. But just a little hint, at the end, what happens here, instead of treating women as objects, instead of acting promiscuously and falling prey to desires, what happens? Instead, Boaz, who are you? Who are you as a person? I see the best example of this in Shoftim is Pelegish Begiva. By her, she's treated as an object by her father, her husband, and the people of the town. She's Pelegish Begiva. She's not a real human being, and that happens over and over again in Shoftim. But what's interesting is we see by Shimshon, and that this we'll go into at the end in the last year, just a parallel by Shkab Shimshon ad Chatzi Halayla. This is when Shimshon just had relations with a prostitute. Vayakam b'chatzi ha'layla, and it's a nameless prostitute. Who else is chatzi ha'layla but doesn't fall prey to this? So if you look, this is the story of Boaz. Vayechi b'chatzi ha'layla. So you have contrast between Ruth and Shoftim, people who don't fall prey to it, people who b'chatzi ha'layla instead act modestly, and people who act promiscuously. And in that way, we're going to see how Ruth, again, is a remedy to the stories, to the ills of society in Sefer Shoftim. Okay, thank you very much, everyone. I look forward to hopefully seeing you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Arthur.
Thank you.
Thank you, Avraham. That was great.
Thank you.
You're a Rabbi.